Well, good morning. I forgot already. 7:19 a.m. Yeah, 20 past 7. I'm out early today because I've got a doctor's appointment. And Pandora doesn't want to stop playing. I don't know if it recorded that in the background or not, but it was irritating, so I shut it off. 17 minutes for the first mile, not bad. Not a great first mile, not a terrible one. Remember when 18 minutes was a good goal? Now I'm always looking for those 16s. So yeah, up early, move in. I left actually before the kids got out this morning because I've got a 8:30 doctor's appointment and I wanted to get out and get the walk out of the way before I left. And get that posted before I go. Today is eye surgeon day. I'm not going to have the surgery. This is the patient intake meeting where they look at my eyes and say, so what are you doing next Tuesday? Or whatever. So today is Friday, April 12th. I don't think I mentioned that. Is it the 12th? Must be. Yesterday was the 11th, so that would make today the 12th. I don't know. I think it's the 12th. I'm not going to pick my phone out of my pocket again. It's too cold. It's like 30 degrees out, which is certainly better than 20, but cold enough that I don't want to take my gloves off again. So I ate breakfast this morning. I ate my toast. And thanks for all the tips on food, by the way. There's some interesting stuff happening there. The protein shakes are a possibility to get 30 grams in 30 minutes. Now the problem is the noise. So when I get up at 5:30, I can't run a blender. Or I have angry people in my house. Now maybe I can mix it up the night before. I can cook as long as it's quiet. You know, a pan is not terribly noisy if you're careful with it. This morning I made chili and eggs. We're really quite good. I don't know that I kept it up long enough to see any health benefit from it. I certainly don't know what the caloric intake of that mess of stuff might have been. So I don't know. I may just go back to, I really need to get back to break my plate. I think one of the problems is that the distribution of food on my plate has shifted toward meat and carbs and away from vegetables. I need to spend more time with my vegetables. What was I doing with vegetables? Oh, I was doing V8 juice. Get the low sodium V8, that shouldn't be too bad. I'm still eating an avocado a day. I like my avocado. I've been eating it as salsa these days, as opposed to a tablespoon of tamari. Soy sauce is a little bit heavy in sodium, so I've kind of shied away from that. I tried it with balsamic vinegar for a while. It was actually quite good. So I've been nattering and nabobbing with a guy named John Hibbs out in Oregon, who's putting together Global Learn Day 2013. He hasn't done it for a while. It's been a couple, three, 4 years. But he puts together this program of educators, one in each time zone around the world. or that's his goal. I think there are actually time zones that don't have educators in them. Or at least not educators that he can communicate with regularly. But the idea is he goes around the world and talks to educators, teachers, people doing interesting things with learning. And I got involved with that years ago, helping him with his website back when it was Ben Franklin's 300th birthday. The tools have come a long way since then. Some of the interesting challenges still have to do with schools, because you still have to figure out how to teach people how to learn. And they're not learning that in school. They're learning that learning is difficult and painful and not very much fun. And then they go home and try to figure out the latest video game and succeed quite admirably. But try to tell them it's because they're learning. You got a different problem. John's been trying to get me to focus on learning outcomes, and talking about melding big data and social media and massively open online courses, and trying to map that onto learning. And of course they don't map, because all of those other things have to do with education. And their goal is ostensibly to facilitate learning, but the reality is that very few people will engage in education unless it has something more tangible than the promise of learning. At least in my experience, both as a student and as a teacher, my goal was really clear. As a student, my goal was incredibly clear. Get a degree. Get this degree. Get a diploma from the high school, then get a bachelor's degree, and then get a master's degree, then get the PhD. But there was something strange that happened, something odd that happened for me. And that was, I started going to school because I needed an internet connection. The grad school, the master's degree happened not because I wanted a master's degree in educational technology to pursue some career goal. The master's degree happened because I needed an internet connection. And after a couple of years of taking courses at random, I made a personal connection to one of the teachers in one of the programs and took several of the courses that that teacher taught, and decided that any program that would have this person as a teacher was a program I wanted to be part of. And so I matriculated into the program and was convinced that I should pursue the PhD immediately following the master's. It's bribed, really. It's like, what would it take? I told them, and they gave it to me. So it's like, oh, okay, well, okay, fine. But part of it was also, as a kind of an old chestnut about advanced education. One of them is, master's degree is something you do for your career. Doctorate is something you do for you. So I really was interested in some of these questions. I really was curious as to how all of this all worked. And the curiosity drove me to seek the doctoral degree and pushed me through my research and got me through the dissertation process. So even though I pretty much lost interest in education almost immediately following my degree, the reality was that I pursued the degree because of innate curiosity and not because of any idea that it was going to be a financially rewarding investment. Monk Paul. So John is trying to get me to talk about learning outcomes, and I want him to tell me what he thinks learning outcomes are, because his perception is people don't learn. My perception is people learn all the time. It's just the difficulty is that they don't learn what we want them to learn. They learn what they want to learn. And they do it very well. So improving learning outcomes is really much more tied to improving school performance. And I don't really give a crap about school performance. Any more than I really care about bookstores. There was a post that I ran across my feed this morning from Huffington Post about how valuable bookstores are and how publishers should step in and save bookstores. They should support them financially in order to maintain their link with the buyers. Now, I don't think the author really understands how bookstores work. We got to start with that. I mean, I think she's an author. She could be just a reporter, I don't know, but this idea that bookstores have an intrinsic value to the community. At one time, I think they did. At one time, I think there was there. At one time, I think bookstores were the window on the wider world of arts and letters. And two things happened. One, the World Wide Web, not the internet, but the World Wide Web, began to show people all kinds of different windows on the world. Not just arts and letters, but all kinds of different windows. Arts, letters, sciences, maths, politics, geography, sociology, lots of different windows that the World Wide Web opened up to a plethora of people. And bookstores stopped stocking books. A bookstore with 100,000 titles, 80-20 rule, 20% of the titles will account for 80% of the sales. So 20,000 titles of the bookstore sell, and the others take up space. And actually, I'm not sure that 80-20 actually works. I think it's more like 10-90. I think it's much more pronounced. 10% of the titles account for 90% of the sales. It's particularly true in a bookstore that has a clientele heavily oriented toward bestsellers. When I worked in a college bookstore, the 6,000, 7,000 titles of textbooks gave the massive amounts of revenue, but very little profit, because the textbook publishers sold those books to us at a very narrow discount. When I began, it was 20%, and then it went to 23%. I don't know what it is now, maybe 25%, I don't know. The rationale being that the publisher would charge less because these books were used for educational purposes. And so they would charge less, which meant they had to discount less, which was admirable, except that the question never really came up. Is that really how much it costs you? Is that really what it costs to produce a textbook? I wouldn't be surprised. Color printing is expensive, I know that. And a few hundred pages of color printing, bound in a hardcover, Sure, that's an expensive proposition. They don't have economies of scale. Meg's accounting that generally sold 250,000 books every September. Really? Costs $195 to produce that book? In volumes of 250,000 a year? So, I don't know. But I do know that the trade paperback, the mass market and trade paperback section, which was the bread and butter, well, that was where all the profit lie, along with the t-shirt sales. The merchandise sales were really what people came to the bookstore to buy, and once in a while they would buy a book. The books were cool. I liked working in the bookstore. I particularly liked trade books, mass market books. Unfortunately, I was the textbooks manager, so I was very in tune with what the textbooks market was doing. And it's one of the few industries where you take an overly priced product, sell it to poor people who don't want to buy it. And you do it with the promise that if they buy it and they pass the course, they will get the degree, which will get them a better job, and they will cease to be poor people. It's not working out so well anymore, so. Anyway, it used to be I would go into a bookstore and I'd walk in and I would smell the ink, I would smell the books. Occasionally I would smell the coffee. But the energy of the possibilities that existed when you walk through the door of a bookstore, the excitement of perhaps finding the latest book by a favorite author, or a book by someone completely unknown. It's like, whoa. The possibilities are endless. Except, you can only do that about once a year. If you go in more frequently, then the chances of finding anything new, anything different from the last time you were there, pretty slim. Even once a quarter is sometimes not enough. I don't even know how many times I went in and I'd drop $100 worth of books. I'd pick up $100 worth of books. And then that would be it. I wouldn't be able to find another title on the shelves for weeks, months, before something would happen and I would find a title that I would be willing to spend $8 for. And then I got into podcasting and the indie writing scene blossomed. It's always been there, it's just been kind of hidden. And I started noticing things like, could never get the series. You had to buy the first book of the series, even though it wasn't finished. Because if you let it go and waited for the series to be finished, then you wouldn't be able to buy the first book once the last book was out. So I found myself, you know, haunting bookstores looking for these first volumes of series. Scott Westervelt series that I have like volume 3 of. And volumes 1 and 2 are both like $15. It's like, no, I don't want to read it that bad. Oh, slow second mile, 19 and a half. Yikes. Well, it's good for you guys because I talk more. It's bad for me because I'm not getting that much exercise. But I am coming up on 2 miles, coming up on the back gate. Bookstores, do we really need to save bookstores? Are bookstores really, really important? I don't know. I'm not convinced. At one point, I was terribly convinced. A good bookstore was like gold. I think a good bookstore still is, but the problem is you can't afford to stock a good bookstore anymore. So there you have it. At any rate, I'm at the back gate. I gotta go get ready for my doctor's appointment. Tomorrow's another day, and with any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.